Let's go to the phones here. Pam from Lake Worth is on the line and listening to us on WBZT in Lake Worth, Florida, which is right outside West Palm Beach. Pam, say hello to Mike Moretti.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Pam. How are you?
I guess I can't see making such a big deal out of Elvis. I was never a big fan of his.
Well, you know, I grew up in Connecticut, and quite honestly, until this week, if you had asked me to sing the words to Love Me Tender, I probably wouldn't have been able to do so. I think the only way...
Well, I think there are so many more people who I really do consider the father of rock and roll than Elvis Presley. They don't make as much of a big deal out of these men who wrote their own music.
Well, Pam, what do you think of Jerry Lee Lewis?
I think he's wonderful.
It's kind of interesting, Mike and Pam. I'm going to bring on the line here right now Gary Hardy, who now owns and operates Sun Studios there in Memphis. It was the home, of course, of the beginning of Elvis Presley many years ago, along with Jerry Lee Lewis and a lot of Chuck Berry, I think, recorded there too as well, didn't he, Gary?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
No, not Chuck.
Oh, he didn't?
No, no.
Okay, who
Mickey,
did record
Mickey
there?
He did, but Chuck wasn't one of them. Of course, he did do us a big favor and write the song Memphis, Tennessee, though. You know?
Yeah, right. Anyway, Gary, who did record there for that? Pam was naming some pretty good people there. A lot of those people did record there, didn't
right.
They?
Well, Pam, Sam Phillips moved here from Florence, Alabama in the late 40s.
That I know.
And rented the studio and opened it in 1950 for the sole purpose of recording race music. The black
which
music.
Would be rhythm and blues today.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Elvis took a lot of songs that were written by black men who should have gotten the name King of Rock and Roll far more than he did.
Well, Pam, your point's taken, well taken, and we're going to discuss that with him in a moment here. Thanks, Pam, for calling us.
Hey, Gary, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you, Mike. Thank you very much.
Hey, my pleasure, and I was going to say to Pam, but I don't think unless they currently or if anybody has never been to Graceland, you really can't truly appreciate the impact of the man until you see the trophy room at Graceland and until you see the dedication of the fans and the visitors and the impact that Elvis Presley and Graceland and Elvis Presley Enterprises truly has on the city of Memphis.
And that's certainly true because Memphis is synonymous with music and Elvis stands at the forefront. But just as you can't understand that without visiting Graceland.
Exactly.
You can't understand Elvis's role in context of the story of rock and roll unless you visit Sun and understand the people that came through Sun, the time frame that they came through, and the impact that they had on our culture's music.
Exactly.
In 51, Sam recorded a band from Clarksdale, Mississippi, of Ike Turner was the band leader. The same Ike Turner we all know and love is Tina's ex. And the song was called Rocket 88, and historians pretty much have agreed that is the first rock and roll recording or a ground zero. There may be a lot of argument for other songs, but they cumulatively agree that that would be a good starting
point. So Memphis is kind of the home of rock and roll anyway, despite Elvis.
Wow, Ike Turner is the father of rock and roll. Hey, that gives me a good excuse, guys. Let's play something by Ike and Tina Turner, one of my favorite songs.
You know, every now and then I think you might like to hear something from us. Nice and easy. But there's just one thing, you see. We never, ever do nothing nice and easy. We always do it nice and rough. We're going to take the beginning of this song and do it easy. But then we're going to do the finish. Right. Here we do Proud Mary. Rolling, rolling, rolling on river. Listen to the story now. Left a good job in the city. Working for the man every night. Rolling, 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 yeah. Rolling.
But I never saw the good side of the city until I hitched a ride on the riverboat queen. The big wheel keep on turning. Ooh, the primary keep on burning. And we're rolling.
Rolling.
Rolling, yeah.
Rolling.
Rolling on the river.
Rolling on the river.
River rolling.
Rolling.
Gary Hardy, you're saying Ike Turner started it all, the rock and roll, huh? Amazing. Right there in Memphis.
It was going to happen through here. The vehicles that happened simultaneously, just like the Jackie Brinson song. Rufus Thomas had the first hit on Sun. Most people are more familiar with Rufus for Walking the Dog on Stax.
Yep.
But he had a song called Bearcat.
I remember that, Bearcatting.
Right. Well, Bearcat was an answer song, which was a very popular concept then.
What was it, Barefoot and it was answering?
No, Hound Dog by Big Mama Thornton.
Was this the same song that Elvis recorded later?
Huh?
Was this the same song that Elvis recorded
later? Exactly, but Big Mama Thornton had the hit on black radio stations, which only happened after World War II.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog, crying all the time. You ain't nothing but a hound dog, crying all the time. Time.
have on the line with us Gary Hardy of Sun Studios in Memphis, and also Mike Moretti of American Airlines. Well, you got anything else to add, Mike, before I get down to discussing the history of Sun Studios with Gary?
With all the, you know, the humor and seeing Elvis is in the airport, you were talking earlier about a death experience and people who've had situations where they've lost a parent. We had one very touching moment at the airport today with a lady who was escorting her mother to the airport to get her off on a plane to Denver, and she did not even recognize the fact that there was a Elvis promotion going on because they had just lost their father the day earlier, and she came up and basically broke down and said, "Thank you very much. You know, thank you for bringing back a lighthearted moment."
A lot of people don't remember that in grief. Hey, thanks a lot, Mike Moretti, for being on.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
And we'll be talking with you again. When I'm in Memphis, I'll look you up.
Definitely do.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Gary Hardy is on the line from Sun Studios, and we'll talk to him when we get back. Don't go away.
Hey, get ready to write down this toll-free number if you'd like to find out how you can make money off the phone company instead of paying them every month. Right, Rod Davis?
Hi, Jerry. In a few moments, I'm going to give your listeners a toll-free number, so I hope that they have a pencil and a paper handy. Folks, does anyone out there know a single person that does not have a telephone? Probably not. Let me ask another question. How many of you know that there's been some changes in the laws regulating the telephone industry? Did you also know that those laws have taken the monopoly powers away from the Ma Bells? That fact is what opened a way for you and me to get paid every month, month in and month out, for as long as we live. If you are interested in making money every time a person pays their phone bill, then I urge you to call 1-866-238-5762. 1-866-238-5762.
Baby, they let me be. You love me, tell me back. Put a chain around my neck. Leave me anywhere. Let me be.
Oh, let him be. Gary Hardy is on the line with us from Sun Studios in Memphis, where Elvis really started. He's at the control room. That's the same room where all of the big Elvis hits, or the early Elvis hits, were done before he went to RCA. Isn't that right, Gary?
Right, Jerry. Yeah, I'm sitting here where I keep a picture on the wall in the control room, and it's of Sam Phillips looking out the control room glass at Elvis Presley, Bill Black, and Scotty Moore. And that was taken at one of the first sessions. And it's kind of just a reminder where I am and, you know, for every day and what really happened here and how it not only impacted in our culture but virtually changed, you know, the world. Because
now, when you're sitting in that control room like now, late at night, and, you know, these memories and those walls and that location, they've had these vibes through the years. You ever feel Elvis's presence?
You know, I feel this. I feel that the energy and the emotions that were presented in this room, not only by him, who of course is the most famous story in, you know, as an entertainer in America's history, but you have to remember, you know, B.B. King started here, and of course he's the king of the blues.
That's right.
And imagine taking Elvis' story and multiplying it times 20 and feeling that, because that's the events that took place here.
Oh yeah, we mentioned Jerry Lee Lewis. You mentioned Rufus Thomas. Oh, there's just a lot of people we haven't mentioned.
Carl Perkins, Johnny Cash, Roy Orbison.
Yeah, Johnny Cash, I guess, was an appliance salesman there and used to go down to Sun Records at night and record.
He came over from Arkansas, from Dyes, Arkansas, and got a job as an appliance salesman while he was working on his music career. And virtually, these things were simultaneous events. All these legendary artists appeared here within about a four-year period. And, of course, Elvis, his first visit to Sun Studio was about 2 weeks after he graduated from high school. And the
myth has it that he was a truck driver. Well, that's not quite so. He had gotten a job through the Tennessee Department of Labor as a machinist apprentice at Parker's Machine Work, and took his first paycheck and came to Sun Studio and made it that incredibly legendary song for his mother. His mother's birthday was months away, so which was that's when Your Heartaches Began and My Happiness. Paid $4 and then went on his way. He came back 6 months later on or about his 20th birthday, to kind of put it all in relation, to record again and paid another $4. So it was 6 months after that before the professional audition happened. So it was not an overnight success, as most people think. But
in other words,
yeah.
Sam Phillips did not sit there in that control room and say, "My God, we've got to sign this guy up."
Exactly. They kind of made a note about him in the book and said, kid with the sideburns, interesting voice. And Sam had a demo from a black songwriter in Nashville that he wanted to do and couldn't get in touch with the black songwriter. So he and Marion Keisker, who was very instrumental in the story, contacted Elvis to come down to try singing this song to do the demo. When he came in and did the song, Sam was very unhappy with his rendition. But he said, "Well, as long as you're here, why don't you sing some things that you like?" People don't know this, but his idol was Dean Martin. Elvis Presley knew every song Dean Martin had had out.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so he did his audition doing basically Dean Martin songs. It was at that time that Sam put him with Scotty Moore and Bill Black, who were recording at Sun Studio with a hillbilly band called Doug Poindexter and the Starlight Wranglers.
Wow.
So he put him with Scotty and Bill, and they woodshed it and rehearsed a few days. Scotty called Sam and said, "I think we're ready." About July 5th, well, exactly July 5th, in 1954, they'd had their first professional session, and that session produced That's All Right, Mama, and The Flip Side, which is Blue Moon of Kentucky. But his story and his influences, which, once again, growing up in Tupelo, the Clear Channel radio stations that existed then were very influential to rural areas.
Yeah, and there was a big show, a big station, an R&B station, a race station, as they called them back
right.
In those days, out of someplace in Mississippi, I think, or Jackson or somewhere down in there.
Well, the first all-black radio station owned in America was right here in Memphis, which was WDIA.
Hey, you're right.
You know, the Clear Channel race station that he listened to was a New York station at the time. And that's where he heard in 1948 the song That's All Right, Mama by author Big Boy Credit. So the crossover and the influence.
Yeah,
from,
so you know, Pam wasn't too far off base when she was talking about these original things. They had a big influence on Elvis's
sure,
life.
Sure, and he always acknowledged it. And there, but, you know, it all came down to this. Someone was destined to be the vehicle to present this great American music, which was this potpourri, this mixture of rural, poor, black and white cultures. And he was it. He was the one. Others are definitely important and played a major role in presenting America's music, but, you know, he represents it all.
Right. You know, Larry Geller, in his book about Elvis, If I Can Dream, Elvis's own story, talks about Elvis many times, reflecting upon the fact that he's the one that came up and was picked to do this. That
yeah.
Elvis actually did some pretty heavy thinking. Let's go to the phones here. Don from Newcastle. Go ahead, Don. We're looking
yeah.
for you. We've been waiting for you, my
friend. I got a little pharyngitis, so I'm having a hard time talking. I was an Elvis fan. I've seen him perform. I went with my mom. He gave my mom a scarf. And I'm presently holding up Elvis coin I'm looking at. I recently went blind. And I think that Elvis was one of the greatest singers and performers in his time. time, and I wish people would just let him live, let him live on in the legend of his music, and not try to make the money off of him, you know, like they have been.
Okay, what do you think about that, Gary Hardy? He seems to think that there's a little bit of disrespect when you try to make money off of Elvis's memory. I see it the other way around. I don't see this commercialization as anything but just promoting the people at Graceland.
A little known story, okay?
Okay. We have on the line right now a very, very fine gentleman, Gary Hardy. He's been in this business. You've been a musician. You've been everything, right, Gary?
Well, yeah. I played from 64 to 84, 14 to whenever, you know. And then got the studio in 87 when no one wanted it anymore.
Yeah, we're going to get into that studio story, but you got to tell us what you were talking about the commercialization.
Yeah. The caller from...
from Indiana.
Indiana. All right. He had said something about the commercialization or, you know, making money off of Elvis. Well, when Elvis died, Priscilla was advised to sell everything and liquidate the estate. And it was her personal mission that she thought that the public would cared much more about Elvis than her attorneys and advisors thought, and that the mansion should be open to the public. And her evidence was for the number of people while he was living that on any given day you could find at the gates. And it was her battle with integrity, because remember, she owns nothing. She owns not 1% of the Elvis Presley estate. It all belongs to Lisa Marie. So her motives were pure, and I think she was correct. And there's no way to accommodate public demand without there being an exchange, you know. But, you know, my personal experience, I was born in 1950, so I grew up in Memphis. And I had an older sister that was 7 years older who was an avid fan and caught up in all of it. His first show in Memphis at the Overton Park Shell, I was 4, and my sister was 13, and my grandmother took her and her friends and me. And next door to the Overton Park Shell is the Memphis Zoo, and all I wanted to know is why I couldn't go to the zoo, you know.
Hey,
but we would see
Walker Skin
at McKellar Lake, you know, when I was 8 or 9. He was part of our life. He was part of our community.
Gary Hardy, I would have figured, I would have bet on it that since you bought this studio and renovated it, what, back in 87 or so?
Right. Uh-huh.
I would have bet that you were, you know, one of those die-hard Elvis fans, but you weren't necessarily a big Elvis fan. You respected him, but it wasn't the, you know, some of these Elvis guys, that's all they think about.
Well, there's very few Memphians. It's a very hard analogy for something that the world has decided is the world's greatest entertainer and entertainment story, especially in American music and rock and roll. But remember that the Memphis, as it's developing into an urban city, basically was a very big country town.
Yeah. I looked in the Memphis phone book, and voila, there you were, the Sun Studio and Sun Cafe. What's that deal?
Well, you know, in the 50s, when Sam opened the studio in 1950, he was here from 50 through 59. Next door, there was a place called Miss Taylor's Cafe and Restaurant, and the studio is small. It has an office area, a cutting floor, and a control room, about 1,400 square feet maximum total, less than that, 1,150. So others, where they would hang out and, you know, spend their time together, sign their contracts, it was all done next door in the cafe. So the cafe was very much a part of the story. They all spent their time there. That's where they talked, worked up songs, you know, and spent the time when they couldn't be in the studio because only the people recording could be in here. So it was as much a part of the story as the studio itself, and that's how it's turned out. When people visit, the cafe has a very nice atmosphere, and you can tell that it is an extension of the studio because so much took place there.
Gary, I'm rushing here because Phil is listening to Chicago, been on the line a long time.
Sure.
Phil, we have about a minute.
Yeah, am I on the air?
Yes.
See, you're talking about Sam, the original owner of Sun Records. What was his last name?
Phillips.
Sam Phillips, that's right.
Sam C. Phillips, all right. Yeah, he opened a studio in 1960, two blocks away.
Hey, Phil, we're out of time.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Phil.
Great show. Sorry we're late. Let's close out with Mystery Train. That was recorded down at Sun Records. We'll see you later. Thanks for listening. This is Jerry Pitt.
16 coaches long. Train a ride, 16 coaches long. Well, that long black train got my baby and gone. Train, train, coming round, round the bend. Train, train, coming around the bend. Well, it took my baby, but it never will again. No, not again. Train, train, coming down, down the line. Train, train, coming down, down the line. Well, it's bringing my baby, 'cause she's my all mine, she's my all mine. Train, train. Train, train, coming round, round the bend. Well, it took my baby, but it never will again, never will again.